Okay, good afternoon to everyone. Today we have a seminar with Sahi Kerem Paz. He's a professor of private law at Keele University in England. And I can say now that he's a good friend of ours in Girona. He's his third time here. He came twice for different conferences in 2012. And now we have the pleasure to having him here for this exclusive seminar, because there are times he participated in workshops with other people. He has a very interesting approach, you will see, not also in legal theory, in private law theory, but also the political implications of his theory are very strong always. He has a very very strong egalitarian concern. I recommend to everyone both his books. The first one that was the way I discovered him is Tort Law, Egalitarianism and Distributive Justice. Has a very novel approach to tort law, and he made some claims that right now you can see this as you can see recent developments that take this kind of approach. For example, in the principles of tort law that we study in some of our master's degree, you will see some egalitarian rules that were not there before in tort law theory, I mean. And his latest book is on sex trafficking. He managed some way, somehow, to present the case for liability for undiscriminated demand of sex without, that means, without checking out whether the person offering sex is someone being exploited or not. This is something really difficult to do for private law theorists because of the causation requirement. And this is exactly the subject that Sahi is addressing today. He will present a paper that is, the title is Eggshell Skulls and the Sick Sick, Observations on Legal Causation Following BCA versus Singh. I found very interesting paper. The reading of this paper, I found it really interesting. I think we have a great time here. Thank you, Sahi, for this presentation, for being here the whole week. And it's your time now, more or less 40 minutes.
Okay. Thank you very much for having me. Thank you, Diego and Jody, for inviting me. I have to open with an apology. Despite the fact that it's my third time here, I still don't speak neither Spanish or Catalan, so I would have to deliver it in English. considering that the alternative is Hebrew, I guess we can compromise on that. The other point, the preliminary point that I wanted to make is that, you know, Diego mentioned my egalitarian approach to tort law, so by all means I don't suggest to you to forget it, but it doesn't have much implication in this specific paper. So this paper is about legal causation, or about the scope of liability for consequences in the tort of negligence. So since I'm not sure what is your background, I would like to start with a few words about the structure of the tort of negligence. So basically there are three elements, depends how you count. There's a duty of care, so regardless of whether if you are negligent or not, you need to establish that you owe a duty to the claimant with respect to the relevant type of damage. There is the issue of the breach, the standard of care, that your behavior should fall below the required objective standard, otherwise there's no liability. And there is a requirement of causation to the damage. Damage is the constitutive element of this tort. And so there are the requirements for factual causation, which is usually the but-for test. And if this is satisfied, you also need to satisfy legal causation, which is some kind of limiting mechanism against too broad liability. Now, the case that triggered my interest, and I will mainly talk about it today, is a case called Bharma and Dab, which is an English Court of Appeal decision from 2010. about 4 or 5 years ago. And this was a case with very interesting and unusual facts. So I will start by describing the facts. So you know that in the subcontinent of India and the peninsula, there are several religions, including the religion of the Sikh religion. So this was a case of a Sikh claimant, a Sikh defendant, and the event was a Sikh wedding. Now, Sikh do not eat eggs for religious reasons as part of their vegetarianism. Bharma, who's the claimant, had allergy to eggs, of which he was aware. They will get back to the significance of this fact later on. He was served dessert which by mistake contained eggs, and he died. So the question was whether the caterer, Dab, whether he's liable for the personal injury for the death because of serving eggs by mistake. So the Court of Appeal answered, yes, there is liability. And if I would like to try to summarize the decision, the Court of Appeal saw it mainly as a matter of duty of care, although he was aware that there was an issue of remoteness or a scope of liability. And essentially it based it on Bharma's, the claimant's, reliance. The fact that he could expect not to be served the eggs, well, he knew that there's no need for him to make inquiries whether there are eggs, given the fact that he knows about his condition of allergy, because it was an event in which he was supposed not to be served eggs like all the guests. Now, the starting point of the Court of Appeal, which I agree, but also this is what makes it an interesting case, is that the court said that there is no general duty of care of a caterer to warn against common product like eggs. So now eggs are not generally something which is dangerous, so you don't need to warn against it or to take measures against it. The court says in an obiter with peanuts it might be different, but this is the starting point with eggs. Now, then the court says that given the religious character of the event, there was a duty not to serve eggs in order not to cause religious offense. This is a very interesting point for itself, and it will be the next paper that I'm going to write, because it relates to the issue of actionable damage. Traditionally, we think that actionable damage in negligence is a personal injury or property, some economic loss, but not... But a religious offense for itself is not necessarily an actionable damage. I think that it's the right decision, but the rest of the analysis doesn't hinge on that. So even if you think that there shouldn't be duty of care in negligence or in other areas of private law for this religious offense, still I would try to convince you that it was the correct decision to impose liability towards Bharma, although it was too narrow, which is one of the points that I'm making in the paper, and I will get back to it in a minute. So the court says, after we establish that there is, under the circumstances, a duty of care to avoid religious offense by serving eggs, so under the circumstances of the case, we could extend it to the physical injury for the following four reasons that the court says. First, there's already duty not to offend. Second, the allergy to eggs is foreseeable. It's foreseeable that some of the guests might have egg allergy. The third point, that the guests could expect not to have eggs, given the fact that it's a religious Sikh event, and therefore to be free from the risk of allergy, suffering injury due to allergy. And then the fourth point that the court mentioned is that Bharma knew of his allergy and could reasonably rely not to be served eggs in this event. Therefore, there's a duty of care. Then the court also analyzed the issue of standard of care and whether there was a place to reverse the burden of proof, which are all interesting, but I'm not going to discuss them I don't discuss them in the paper, and I'm not going to cover them in this presentation. Okay, so this is the major case that I'm going to discuss, but during the discussion of the paper, I'm grappling with another famous English decision, this time about the House of Lords, which is called Chester and Afshar. So I want to say a few words about this case as well. So this was a case of a question about causation with respect to the failure to inform Chester about a risk of a medical procedure that she was going to undergo. So she was not warned about the risk of 1 to 2% inherent risk associated with the procedure, and the risk materialized as she suffered the physical injury. She admitted that if she would have been warned, had she been warned, she would have still undergone the procedure, but on a later date. And then the House of Lords, by 3-2 majority, said that there should be liability for the entire damage, despite the fact that they considered that according to ordinary principles of legal causation, there should not be liability. And I will get back to it later. I think this is the correct decision, that there shouldn't be liability for the physical harm, because once she agreed to undergo it, so this the failure is just a coincidence to the damage. But I will get back to it. And the reason that they deviate from established principles of legal causation is in order to vindicate the patient's interest in autonomy. Okay, so this is the background about the cases. Now, a quick overview of what is my argument in the paper. So, I think the case of Bahama raises two questions in terms of liability for consequences. One normative and the other is analytical. The normative question is, should there be liability toward Bahama? And related to this, still as part of the normative question, should duty be extended to guests, to observant guests who are unaware of the fact that they have egg allergy? So if one of them would have been injured, unlike Bahama who knew, but the one that didn't know, should there be liability? I argue the answer is yes. And then there's the analytical question. Is it a matter of duty of care, which is, as I said, this is mainly how the Court of Appeal went about it, or is it a matter of legal causation? So my answers to the normative question, I'm saying that any guest relying on the religious character of the wedding and is aware of the allergy should be owed a duty, whether observant or not. So again, if I come to this wedding, I'm not an observant Sikh, I'm allowed to eat eggs, but I know that I have egg allergy, I know that I shouldn't, I'm not supposed to be served eggs there, therefore I don't ask, I get the injury, I should be owed a duty of care, which I think that this is what also the Court of Appeal thinks. It doesn't say it implicitly, but from its analysis, it goes without saying that this should be the result. The second point, that this is sort of my critique of the Court of Appeal, I think that the duty should be owed to any observant guest who happens to have allergy, even unbeknown to her or him. So I'm saying that there is some kind of reliance, but it's not reliance that is based on knowledge that you have the egg allergy. And then we can try to defend it later. About the analytical question, I'm saying that there is much to be said for viewing the problem as essentially one of duty of care. So in this sense, the Court of Appeal is correct. I have a feeling that this claim that I'm making is a bit out of line with what other people think based on the email discussions of scholars on this case. But the second point that I'm making in the paper is that even if we analyze it as a matter of legal causation as opposed to a matter of duty of care, so there should be liability. And in order to explain it, I need to explain what are the tests for legal causation and what they are satisfied in this case. Okay, so I will start with duty of care analysis, then to legal causation, and if I will have time, I will say a few words about the overlap between duty and legal causation. So, just to remind you that the court said that there are four reasons why there should be duty of care, that already duty not to offend, the allergy to eggs is foreseeable, the guest would expect not to be served eggs, and Brahma knew of his allergy. So what I'm saying is that basically the first three points are sufficient to justify duty of care to observant guests unaware of their allergy. You don't need the fourth point that Brahma knew about his allergy. And it's interesting to say to realize that Brahma is very unlikely claimant, because how on earth did he know that he has egg allergy if he's an observant Sikh not supposed to eat eggs? This is a thing that the court didn't discuss at all. Now, it's much more foreseeable for me as a caterer that there might be, if you are all observant sick, that some of you might have egg allergy of which you are not aware. This is foreseeable, but it's less foreseeable that any of you who are supposed to be observant sick would somehow find out that they are that you are have egg allergy, and therefore would specifically rely on that going to my the catering that I provide. So if it's true that the duty of care in Brahma is limited only to observant Sikh who know about the allergy, so it's quite insignificant case, because again, it's a freakish coincidence that he knew about it. So how many people would be able to rely on that? I'm arguing that the true understanding of this case is that it doesn't matter whether you knew that you had an allergy, you still could rely on of it as a side benefit to the fact that you observe for other reasons, and therefore you are owed duty. So, just getting back to a point that I made briefly previously, even if there's no duty of care to avoid religious offense, still we could say that there is a duty of care to those relying on the religious character not to be served eggs, and then they suffer if they have egg allergy. So basically the argument is that observant guests also rely on adherence to free from eggs menu, not only to protect them from religious offense, but also to protect them from the risk that they might be allergic to eggs unbeknown to them. So in order to defend this, I need to explain why I accept the court's starting point of the analysis, that there's no duty of care in general about eggs, which is a common product. What makes this observant, unaware guest something different that creates a duty that doesn't exist otherwise? So I'm arguing that there are two kinds of vulnerabilities here. The first is what I call in the paper informational vulnerability. So if you are an observant Sikh, but obviously it could be extended to all observant people who have dietary restrictions, so you don't know if you have allergy to the product that you don't consume for religious reasons. So you know that you might have it, you don't know if you have it, but you do know that your only way to ensure, to protect yourself from suffering the injury is to keep the religious restriction. That is the only way that you could be sure that you wouldn't suffer the allergy that you might or might not have. So you have this kind of informational vulnerability, and What is important is that the defendant has control over the situation. I don't have, as an observant guest, any other way to protect myself other than either asking if I don't have a reason to expect that the eggs wouldn't be served, or to rely on the fact that I'm going to a vegan restaurant to a Sikh wedding, and then I know I shouldn't be served eggs. So this is I'm under the control of the defendant. I don't have an alternative means to protect myself. Therefore, I'm in your hand. This is what creates the proximity. It makes it fair, just, and reasonable to impose liability. So this is one thing that makes observant guests who are unaware of their allergies stand out in comparison to the usual case. And the second point is a medical vulnerability. Now, the Court of Appeal continued under the assumption that the guests to the Sikh wedding are not more susceptible than the general population for allergy. I argue that this assumption is very questionable, and it's very likely that they are more susceptible in two ways in comparison to the general population. First of all, I'm thinking that the incidence that they would have egg allergy is likely to be higher than in the general population. And the reason is that if you come from an observant family that for generations followed these dietary restrictions, so there are no evolutionary pressures against mutations that would make you vulnerable to it. So again, for the general population, and we are all exposed to eggs. If some of us have a gene that has, especially if it's a lethal gene, so you know, we would die probably young, and then the incidence of this allele in the pool of genes would be low. But if you are a religious Sikh, so for generations, you know, there might be mutations that would make you susceptible, and that they might multiply. You know, especially if you marry between Sikh population, and then you know there are no evolutionary pressures against it because no one eats eggs. So this obviously, if this is true, and I think it is true, so it makes very good reason why there should be duty of care, why they should stand out in comparison to other members of the population. The other medical point is that I think in general allergies are more common in children but have more serious manifestation if you get them as an adult. So again, if you are not from the Sikh religion, you are likely to be exposed to the egg allergy at a child. The statistic says that 2% of children and 0.1% of adults have this egg allergy. But okay, but it wouldn't be too serious. And as an adult, it might disappear. But if the first time that you're exposed to it is as an adult, then it might be serious. As you know, the facts here might also perhaps suggest. So again, in this sense, obviously exposing someone who's not supposed to eat eggs to the random case of negligence in which they would be served eggs when they don't expect to eat, it makes it more dangerous. Because there's no reason to believe that you necessarily would be a child when this negligence would happen. So therefore, you are more at risk that the consequences would be more severe. Okay, so this is what I had to say about duty of care. So basically, you could rely on the religious character also to have the incidental benefit of protecting it, protecting you from the risk, the associated risk of allergy. Turning to the test of legal causation, there are two relevant rules. One is the rule against compensation for coincidental loss. If the loss is coincidental, so there shouldn't be liability even though there was but for causation. I will give examples in a minute. The second rule is what the Americans call, and I follow this terminology, the harm within risk rule. So the harm should be a manifestation of one of the risks which made the conduct a breach of duty. Again, I will give examples soon. Lord Hoffman, in a famous English case, called it the scope of duty test. So, before elucidating the test, there's some tendency in English law to view the two rules as identical, as the same, as a fully parallel. So, this House of Lords decision, which is called the SAMCO, and then there's a very recent article from a few months ago by Clark and Nolan in the Oxford Journal of Law Review that they simply analyze it as one thing. You know, they call the risk, they cite SAMCO, but they treat the test as all the analysis as a matter of coincidence. So I clarify in the paper that the rules are different, and I would like, through the examples that I will give here, to try and convince you that these are two different rules, and actually that coincidence, the rule against liability for coincidences, is a subcategory of the broader rule of the harm within risk. So a few examples, which are all classic examples for what is coincidental loss for which there shouldn't be liability. One, you know, I drive my car, I speed negligently, and while I speed, or even after, but even let's say that while I speed, just it happens that a tree falls on the car and injures the passenger. So there is negligence. I owe duty of care to my passengers to drive carefully. I drove negligently. Also, there's bad for causation because had I not speeded, so I wouldn't be at the moment that the tree fell. However, there's a consensus that there shouldn't be liability in such a case because it's merely a coincidence. The meaning that it's a coincidence is that my negligence didn't increase the risk, the probability that this type of accident would happen. Driving fast, too fast, does decrease the risk that trees would fall. Okay? So therefore, this is just a coincidence for which there shouldn't be liability. The case of SAMCO that I mentioned is also properly understood an issue of coincidence. This was a case of negligent valuation of value of property. And then there was a market fall in the prices of the property, so there was an added loss. The House of Lords says there's no liability for the added loss from the fall of the market, only for the difference between the negligent and correct valuation. So again, Lord Hoffman puts it as in the terminology or semantics of how within risk rule, because he says it's not the purpose of the valuation to get advice or to protect you from market falls, it's just to give you a cushion for the loan that you give. But actually, it is a rule against coincidence because negligent advice about the value of property doesn't increase or decrease or affect in any way the chances of general market fall. So again, it's a pure coincidence. Lord Hoffman, in this case, gives a classic example, again of a coincidence, of the mountaineer that has a knee problem and goes to the doctor and asks her or him, would my knee withstand a climb in the Himalayas? And the doctor says, yes. This is a negligent advice. The mountaineer goes and then there's an avalanche and he dies. So again, bad for causation exists. If the doctor would say, no, your knee is too weak, so he would be still alive. But it's merely a coincidence because negligent advice about knees, crumbling knees, doesn't increase the risk of avalanche or of dying from avalanche. And then I mentioned earlier the case of Chester. properly understood, Chester is also a case of coincidence because for the subgroup of patients that testify about themselves, as Chester did, that even if she would have got warning, even had she warned, she would have undergone the procedure, So the lack of warning didn't increase the risk of the injury because the risk is associated to taking the procedure. So again, coincidence. However, as I said earlier, the rule against coincidence is only a subcategory of a broader rule. So I want of the harm outside the risk. So I want to show you cases in which the harm is not coincidental, it is increased, but nevertheless, it's outside the scope of the relevant risk, and therefore there shouldn't be liability for it. So one example is from the restatement, the new restatement from 2010 about physical and emotional harm. It's section 29. And then the illustration is that a hunter gives a loaded gun to a child, let's say the 10, 11-year-old child, gives her the gun, the rifle, and then the child drops the gun, but instead of shooting, it falls on her toe and breaks it. So there is negligence, because you're not supposed to hand over a loaded gun to children. There is bad for causation, but the harm that materialized is outside the scope of the relevant risk. What makes the handing over to a child negligent is the risk that the gun might shoot, not that the gun might fall. Now, this is not a coincidence because handing over anything, including guns to children, increased the chance that they would drop it. But this is not the relevant risk. So here we see an example of a risk which is increased due to the negligence, but it's not a coincidence since it's outside the scope of the relevant risk. A second example is Darby and National Trust, which is another English Court of Appeal decision. So this was a case when there was a lake in which rodents urinated, and this caused the risk of a certain disease called Wills disease. The occupier was negligent in not putting a sign warning against swimming in it for this risk. The claimant's husband, Darby, went for a swim and he drowned and died. So, again, the Court of Appeal said correctly the harm that materializes is outside the scope of the relevant risk. What made it negligent not to warn against swimming is the risk of the disease, not the risk of drowning, because there was nothing special about this lake. However, it's not a coincidence in the way that we defined earlier, because obviously not putting a sign against swimming does increase the risk of drowning, only that it's not a negligent a risk. Okay, so now when we understood that we have two different tests, let's try and apply them on Bahama. How much time do we have left? Okay.
10.
Okay. 15. So, first of all, and this is, I think, not controversial, the harm to Bahama is definitely not a coincidence. Because the risks are locked in together. Exposure to eggs both causes religious offense. No, this is for sure if you are observant, but also puts at risk those with have egg allergy, whether they know it or not. So the same act increases both risk of religious offense and of a physical injury. Therefore, it's not a coincidence. But as I said earlier, I believe that coincidence doesn't exhaust the legal causation. So I need to show that the harm that happened is within the relevant risks. So the short answer to it is that the discussion in a way falls back to what I did about the duty, about the informational vulnerability and medical vulnerability. And I would say a few words at the end why it really means that it's an issue of duty of care, not of of legal causation in this sense. But to try and see why the risk is not outside of the relevant scope, we could try and take two perspectives. One of the defendant, the caterer or the restaurateur, the owner of the restaurant, and one of the victim. So starting with the defendant's perspective, let's say that I'm an owner of a vegan restaurant, and I provide food. So I know that people would rely on the fact that I serve vegan food. But I also know that people have different motivations. People have different motivations to be vegan. Some do it for religious reasons. Some do it for ethical reasons, you know, sustainability, animal welfare. Some do it for health issues. You know, cholesterol is not good to them. Some know or suspect that they might have allergy. Obviously, I can't say, my motivation was because I'm a religious Sikh, or my motivation as a restaurateur is because I care about animals. So if your motivation was different, I don't owe duty to you. It's nonsense. Obviously, the moment that I say I serve vegan food, I invite reasonable reliance by people from all kinds of motivations, and therefore, whether the injury is religious, ethically based, injury to feelings, or medical, I would be liable. So once this is accepted, we need to see whether there's a relevant difference with the case of Dab. So again, the case of Dab, what makes it ostensibly different is that there it was clear that the motivation of the defendant was religious, and also that the expectation that those that would be protected by it, it's mainly for religious offense. However, once it is understood that for observant Sikhs the risk of religious offense and of physical injury are locked in together, as I explained earlier, so Dab's case becomes indistinguishable from the vegan restaurant owner, because both defendants know that physical injury is foreseeable, what the court said, and that some guests expect to be safe from allergy injury if they don't consume eggs. So again, we don't need the special reliance because you know, you Bahama know that you are allergic to eggs. So I'm saying just because Dab knows that for sure all the guests who are observant would suffer religious offense, it doesn't say that he shouldn't be liable for the associated risk of physical injury if the restaurateur would be, and we see that there's no relevant distinction. So, as I said earlier, a free-from representation invites reliance that might protect different interests than the one intended by the seller. So I give in the paper examples. Let's say, you know, I'm a religious Jew that runs a kosher butchery. I can't say to the, I sell by mistake pork, which is against kosher rules and also against halal Muslim rules. So I can't say, I intend to protect only Jews, not Muslims. So if you came and bought it because it's halal, so now I'm not liable to you. Of course not. Also, if someone relies on the fact that kosher rules forbid mixing of meat and dairy, and someone is lactose intolerant and they buy meatballs and then in the meat negligently there's milk, so the defendant can say my reasons were religious, not health related. You invite reasonable reliance. So this is one point. The other point is that to exclude physical injury, to say that physical injury is a different type of risk than the risk that made Dab negligent, it's problematic because the motivation of the development of the religious dietary rule might have been partially health-related. So I don't know about the Sikh religion. I know a bit more about the Jewish religion. And definitely by authoritative text, I know of 20th century rabbis, who, by the way, were both MDs and philosophers. So they say that either the main reason or one of the reasons for the kosher rules is the associated health benefits that they think that they are in eating kosher. So it's very tricky to start separating the health from the purely religious. Also, people act on mixed motives. So not only that among the population, some would act on religious, some on ethical, secular, and others on medical. It might be that the same person would act on mixed motives. You know, perhaps I'm a religious Jew who happens to be also vegetarian, and then if I'm being, I buy chips in McDonald's that they are being advertised as a vegetarian, and then I find that the oil was had beef in it, so I'm offended twice, you know, as a Jew and as a vegetarian. So, therefore, all the separation between the health risk and the non-health or the religious risk is suspect. Finally, from the consumer's perspective, so the final move that I do in the paper is to try and contrast the observant Sikh from someone else who goes to the wedding, and I agree that this person is not owed the duty of care. So this would be a non-observant Sikh who's not aware that he has an egg allergy, because if he would be aware, so it is agreed that he relies. And then, you know, it just happens that his allergy kicks off, his or her allergy kicks off, and they die. I agree that there shouldn't be a duty of care there, so I need to explain why, what's the difference. First of all, I want us again to observe that this claimant is very much unlikely one, because again, if you have allergy to a common product and you don't observe, so you're likely to already know about it, you know, usually as a child. But even if it just happens that now it's the point that it kicks off, so again, it's mere coincidence and perhaps not even but for causation, because, you know, if I wouldn't be served eggs in the Sikh wedding of my friend that I went today, I would get it tomorrow when I get to the English pub and get English breakfast with eggs. Okay? So this was, in a way, a coincidence that I got it here. If I wouldn't get it today, I would get it tomorrow. But for observant Sikh, unlike this hypothetical person, they are not willing to take the risk of injury from egg allergy. So one way to see it is that a side benefit of adhering to the religious restriction, dietary restriction, is that you protect yourself from the risk of physical injury, dubbed due to his injury, expose them to that risk, and therefore he should be liable for the damage, even if they weren't aware of their allergy. So this is what I had to say about the legal causation analysis, and then last point about the overlap between duty of care and legal causation. And in a way, it was interesting for me the process that I underwent when I was working on this paper, because I was thinking of writing it, you know, for several years. It's a case that was 4 years ago. And when I started writing it, I thought that one of the points, one of the sections that I want to make in this paper is to criticize the court that, like many other decisions, for example, like in Samco, they treat it as a matter of duty of care, not as a matter of legal causation. But then when I was reading about exchanges about this debate, I saw that actually there's lots, much to be said that it's necessarily an issue of duty of care, because when we think of it, duty of care is duty between a typical class of claimants owed to them by typical class of defendants with respect, and this is crucial, to a certain type of damage. So if it's the duty of care is necessarily with respect to certain type of damage, so you need to decide whether this type of damage is merely physical, merely spiritual, or also physical. And in any event, I'm saying when you read the decision in Bahama, you see that the court was alert to the fact that there is an issue of different damage, but the argument that it gave, I think, are convincing why there should be liability, although, as I said earlier, it's too narrow, because it should include also those who are not aware that they have allergy. And then the last point is that to me the proof that the kernel of the Bahama case is an issue of duty of care rather than of a legal causation is the fact that the non-observant guest who's aware of his or her allergy is owed a duty of care. Here, there's no issue that I expected damage X and what happened is damage Y. Because here, to begin with, we talk about whether there's duty of care for physical injury from allergy. So if the reasons that the reliance, the reasonable reliance is convincing, so what I'm saying that basically it should convince us also to those who rely in a bit weaker way as a necessary benefit for the fact that they adhere to religious diet for religious reasons. So I would stop here. Thank you very much.